obviously haunted.
Obviously.
Oh my god. I'm really excited about this week's episode, Allison.
Is this the big Halloween finale?
This is the big Halloween finale. Hello. Hi, listeners. Welcome to the big Halloween finale. Woo! Of Obviously Haunted. I'm really excited. So my whole plan at the beginning of this season was to, like, stretch this out into, you know, December. But I have started this coding boot camp. So if there are any nerds out there that want to, like, tell me that this is a stupid idea, keep it to yourself because I already paid a lot of money for it. I started this coding boot camp, so I'm learning how to code. And I realized that I need to take a little break. So after this episode, we're going to take a little break from the podcast, but you will definitely be getting bonus episodes after the new year. And hopefully we'll have some new and exciting stuff for you.
Maybe I'll try telling a story if I can get up the guts to do it.
All you gotta do is, it's easier than you think. It's easier than you think. You just gotta do it. Recognize that, like, we're not live streaming right now. Do you know how much I cut out of these fucking episodes?
Yeah.
And some of it's hard. Every once in a while, I will literally spend 30 minutes cutting one like out, because once you hit five of them in a single sentence, you really start going, okay, I need to limit the number of likes. And I can talk pretty fast, so they string together with other words. It's hard to cut them out. It's hard. All right. I'm really excited about this story. I'm really excited. It's kind of a weird one. And it's in Florence, Mississippi. Okay. I'm going to talk about that in a minute, but have you ever been to Mississippi?
No.
Have you ever been to the South?
Not particularly. I mean, I drove
through it.
Yeah.
Through the South, kind of.
To get to Colorado, but no.
So it's not even that far south. Yeah. I recognize that in the description of this podcast, it's like, each week I talk to my guest host about someplace that's close to their heart, and that is not the case with you. I just tell you random ass stories.
You do.
Oh well, whatever. So this is about Mississippi, but I don't think that's, like, the important part of it. But that's sort of our whole spiel, so that's what we're gonna say. So I'm Becky.
And I'm Allie.
And Florence, Mississippi is obviously haunted. I'm excited about the story because I saw an advertisement. The research of this episode is all from a single documentary film, and I highly recommend everyone spend the, like, $2 on Amazon to rent and watch this documentary. It's really good. It's excellent.
You were telling me about this, I think.
Yeah. So the documentary is called... So the documentary is called The House Between, and did I put the information in here? No, I didn't, but I will. So the documentary is called The House Between, and it's this house, and it's haunting, and the documentary is about the 10 years of paranormal investigation that's been going on in this single home because of the activity that happens. That was really cool. Kyo just, like, jumped in front of the camera. So it was this perfect arc of cat in front of the camera.
Is this, like, legit documentary?
This is a legit documentary, yeah.
Or it's not, like, the Blair Witch Project documentary?
No, okay. It's real. It's absolutely real. And because it's real, it has some slow bits or whatever. But it is absolutely... So I watched it. I did the notes. This is not a story that you can find anything else on, really, because, like, it's all right there in the documentary. But there were some slow bits or whatever, and there are parts that I'm not going to talk about in this episode. But the stuff... it's worth getting all the way to the end. Let's say that. It's worth getting all the way to the end. And we're going to, okay. I mean, I'm going to totally spoil it. If you don't want spoilers, just go watch it and then come back and you can hear how I feel about it. So.
All right, I'll see you later.
No, you have to listen to spoilers. Okay. So I'm going to tell you about, like, I'm going to do my best. I'm going to tell you about sort of the history of what's going on in this. And then I'm going to tell you about the haunting. And then we're going to go ahead and give it a grade or whatever. But this is kind of a special episode because I know for y'all, if you're listening to this, then you must have a little bit of that, like, bug in you that you like the spooky stories. And maybe I think we have enough of a skeptical bent in our telling of stories that if you're here, you're maybe not, like, a totally true believer. Because I feel like we would probably piss off all the true believers.
probably.
But it's the stuff like this where it's just a human being who has nothing to gain, really. And they're just telling their story because they feel like they need to. This is the stuff that's really compelling to me. So when I saw the trailer for this movie, I thought, okay, this seems bad. It seems like it's going to be super bad because it's another documentary. I thought it was going to be like The Blair Witch. I thought it was going to be like obviously fake.
Yeah, and that's why Derek didn't want to watch it with me. He's like, that's bullshit. And I was like, oh, Becky told me to watch it.
Sound good. It's very compelling, and you can make your own decisions, and maybe after this episode, you can make Derek listen to it, and then you'll go watch it. Okay, so a woman named Alice Jackson lives in Florence, Mississippi, and in the 1990s, Alice bought some land, and she knew what she wanted. She had planned out this house, like a dream house for herself, and she had saved up the money, and she bought this land and had a house built on her land to the exact design that she wanted.
Nice. All by herself? Independent woman?
Well, yeah, all by herself, independent woman, but, you know, obviously she didn't build it by hand, like she hired contractors.
Right.
But she had this house built. That was my first, like, this isn't a regular haunted house story. Mm-hmm. Because this is a story about a haunted house that was, she's the first owner, she's the only owner since it was built.
Yeah.
In 2011, Alice hit her final straw in this house. So she had been having experiences, she'd been living there since she built it. But she'd been having, like, weird experiences consistently there. And her final straw happened when she woke up to see a shaft of light in the middle of her pitch black bedroom. And this shaft of light was bright as daylight and looked like daylight. So it wasn't like car headlights or something like that. It was vertical from the ceiling down, like a shaft of daylight out of nowhere. She didn't know what to do. She didn't think anyone would believe her that this was happening. And nothing really happened on that. Like, she wasn't injured or anything like that. It was just this experience of seeing the shaft of light and then having it disappear. And at that point, she decided that she couldn't stay at the house at night anymore. So she moved out. But she left all of her stuff there. And she didn't have plans to sell the house or anything like that. She didn't really know what to do. Florence, Mississippi is kind of a small town. It's a really small town, and there are like 20 churches there. Like, it's small, it's pretty religious, in the Bible Belt. People don't really, they don't believe in ghosts necessarily, or if they do, then it's in that way of like, well, this is clearly something that's bad and you shouldn't mess with it or whatever. So Alice thought there's no way that anyone was going to take her seriously or be able to help her. But she reached out to some people, and a news station got involved, and she ended up going on like a local news channel and talking about her experience. And it was really just like she just didn't know who to talk to, and she thought maybe someone watching the investigation or watching the news story would know what to do and would be able to help her. And she was right. That news story caught the attention of some independent hobbyists, some paranormal investigators.
Mm-hmm.
So the first person that you meet in the documentary is named John Bullard, and he is a marketing director. So he has a job. He has a, you know, a real adult job, and he's also an amateur paranormal investigator. So his whole kind of backstory is, as a kid, he used to see shadow figures and he would hear voices and things. Whoa. And he thought, as he grew up, like that kind of experience stopped, and he thought that he probably was just like crazy, that he had some kind of psychotic break or something as a kid, and that he didn't, that that wasn't a real experience that he'd had. But he also knew about the paranormal, and he kind of wanted to like test the waters and see if he could reproduce the kinds of experiences that he had when he was a kid, to see if they were real or if they were just figments of his imagination or like some kind of hallucination. And as an adult, he started to do paranormal investigations and had some experiences with other people, like other members of a team, that really pushed him from being a skeptic to being a believer. So he captured some EVPs, he had some other experiences, and devoted like a good hobby, you know, devoted a portion of his life, not all of his life, but a portion of his life, to doing these amateur paranormal investigations. So he was actually referred to the house by a friend who had seen Alice's news story, and he reached out to her, and she agreed to let him investigate the house. So his group, his little amateur group, started investigating the Mississippi house about 9 years before this documentary took place. So for 9 whole years, just every once in a while, like on his free time, he has come in and done investigative stuff in the house. And Alice doesn't sleep there anymore, so he can go in there at night. She doesn't stay there. They have cameras and stuff set up all the time, and they kind of go through all of this footage and listen to all of the recorded sound and things like that on their own time. So the next person that you meet, his name is Brad Cooney. And he was actually a journalist by profession. He had been a sports journalist, and he now does like podcasting and stuff and works from home. And he saw the house on the news and reached out to Alice separately. So this is a separate investigator who has a journalism background who reached out to Alice. And he wasn't really into the paranormal necessarily at the time, but was sort of looking for a different direction to go and was just interested in her story. And so he kind of approached it from a different angle. And when he got to the house the very first time that he went to see it, he had an experience. And we'll talk about that later, but he had an experience there. So from that first time, he was convinced that this was something that he wanted to dig into. And he has tried, like, looked at it from every experience that happens, he tries to debunk it. Because that's what investigative journalists do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he has been trying to, like, essentially disprove the original experience that he had in the house since the beginning. So for the last almost decade.
Mm-hmm.
He has even brought along friends, including someone that he was friends with who was a former police officer. So he brings people who are trained to be observant and to be logical and not necessarily are, like, already believers.
Mediums and, yeah.
Right. So, the next person that you meet in the, well, I don't know if he's like the next person, but the next person who matters that you meet in the documentary is Steve Gonsalves. I don't think I'm saying it right, and I apologize. He's actually the filmmaker, like the director of the film, and he's the third paranormal investigator. So he was brought in and was interested in Allison's, or you're Allison, in Alice's story. later on, and his deciding to make this documentary was really about finding a uniqueness in her story that he wanted to delve into and bring sort of another level of investigation to the table from a documentary filmmaker's perspective. So he is the one who, like, brings in the experts, and it's really kind of an interesting perspective to come at it, because it's not that he's not a believer or is a believer, it's that he's reaching out to connections and professionals and things in this way of saying, like, well, instead of just presenting the evidence, here's all of the stuff that's happened, let's talk to all these different people to see if we can actually figure out, you know, what the story is here.
Yeah.
And that's basically what it is. The big thing is none of these groups of people knew each other or had any connection before Alice's house. So the other two paranormal investigators, they've been investigating on and off for about 10 years. So they are friends now, but they didn't know each other in advance. Alice didn't know any of these people. And for the last decade, they've just been doing this on their free time. And she has not lived there for the last 10 years. She has not lived there since 2011. So like 9 years, but so that's kind of nuts. Okay. We are going to delve right into the haunting and the fucking craziness of it. So, Alice has this house built on this land that she buys. And from the very beginning, like as soon as she moved into the finished house, which for anybody who's had a house built before, it's not like you can just build a house all willy-nilly and then just move into it. Like, you have to have it inspected, and it has to pass all these tests. It's not like you can just build someone a ramshackle, like, hut, and then it's fine.
It's the process.
Right. And so she moved into a brand new home that had gone through all of these processes and tests and things, and she immediately started having problems. And the early on problems were things like lights shutting on and off. And that seems like it's probably a wiring issue, you know, if you've just moved into a house. But of course, she gets an electrician out immediately and there are no problems with the wiring. So, but it still happens. And at a certain point, it starts to be that she can talk to and get timed responses from whatever this entity is. So she can, like, ask a question or, like, say, okay, if you're here, if you're real, turn the light off now or whatever, and get that timed response from the light.
Which,
you don't know? You don't know that. So things sort of escalated from there. She started seeing shadow figures, and objects started moving around when she wasn't there. And then, of course, lights are turning on and off. And they have some video evidence. So this is, you know, all this is happening. She has this shaft of light that happens in her bedroom. She decides to move out. The paranormal investigations start. And over the years, they have gotten this one piece of really compelling video evidence. So like I said, because she doesn't live there anymore full time, they've set up cameras all over the house. And one of the places they set up a camera was on the staircase. They have all of these things set up, like balls and stuff set up on the staircase. And one of the balls is a baseball. And they captured some video evidence early on of the baseball for no reason. It seemingly of its own volition rolls off of the step and down the stairs. And there are other balls on the staircase, like different sizes and types, and none of them move, just the baseball, and it rolls by itself, and it's video evidence. So when Steve comes in, the first thing that he does is get a contractor and an electrician out there on camera. So this is not, it's not that they haven't done this before. It's just that he's doing it on camera to show, you know, they've done this. They've brought the professionals out, and the electrician comes in and says all the wiring, all the switches, all the breakers, those are all, they all check out. There's nothing going on with any of that, so there doesn't seem to be a problem with the electricity, but lights still flicker on and off. A contractor comes in and checks the leveling of the home, like checks the leveling of the foundation and the land and the stairs and doorways and all those things, and everything is level. In fact, not even enough that you would think over a couple, like 20 years or whatever, that it would be off a little bit, but it's almost brand new, totally level. So that all checks out. So they kind of talk about other experiences that people have had, and these paranormal investigators over the last, you know, 9 years, they talk about the experiences they've had at the house. And John, the marketing director, he said he actually witnessed what they both want. John and Brad, they both want to witness this light that Alice had seen. That's what they want. The closest either of them have come to it is John has witnessed flashes of light from under a door where the room had been empty and nobody was in the room. So he witnessed that, but there's no, and there's video evidence of that, but it was just like one experience and he wasn't there in the room with it. They actually talk a little bit about it being extraterrestrial, like about it being UFO related. And they interview a lady down the street who had a similar experience with like weird lights in the sky. And it's a little bit like, it feels a little bit like filler. Like I don't really understand why they even bring it into that, but it's just kind of weird. So Steve decides he's going to check this theory, and he talks about how like there are limestone deposits all over the place in Mississippi and in that area of Mississippi, and how limestone deposits are considered to be a conduit for energy and that they retain and release energy. So he actually goes to a physicist, a professor of physics, and he talks to this professor about the various video footage that they have so far and about the stories. So they talk about the lights and they talk about the baseball and they talk about like, is it possible that, or is there like a natural phenomenon that could explain these things? And the scientists, this is what I find really interesting, that the scientists have a lot of theories about how you could fake these types of things. Like, oh, well, like you could use magnets or you could use something like that, but there has to be force exerted on the ball, right? For the ball to roll, it has to have some kind of force exerted on it. So could it roll by itself? No, it needs something. neither of them buy into the idea that it's paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
But they also don't, off the top of their heads, have some kind of explanation for it. They do kind of weigh in on the light and say that light doesn't happen spontaneously. It doesn't just get created. It can be created by static or electricity or lighting or lightning. And there is something called St. Elmo's fire, which is like a buildup of static electricity that creates light in the dark. And the thing that I thought of immediately was, this is a really small example of this, but like when you're wearing a fleece sweater or something and you're under a furry blanket and you pull the blanket away from the fleece sweater and it like lights up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not the same thing as a column of daylight that just appears in your bedroom, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, but that's sort of where they stood on that, is that these things are physical reactions, you know, the moving of an object or the lights in the sky or lights in the bedroom. Like, these are physical reactions that would need something to cause them. And so you're kind of put in this position of, well, either they're faking, this is being faked, or there's not an explanation for it. And they do, the physicists go into sort of multi-dimension, like multiverse theory a little bit, and have this idea of, this is kind of crazy, and it's crazy to hear a professor of science talk about this, but it's also, have you ever looked into quantum physics or anything for any reason?
Not really.
Physics, when it gets to that really small level of like inside your cells, it doesn't work the same way that it works in the big world. It gets weird. And I can't explain it because I had to do some research on it for a play once, and I got an illustrated comic book that was like quantum physics for kids or whatever, and it was still way over my head. It's just nuts, really. But one of these theories is the multiverse theory, and it comes from this idea of, I think it's the electrons are in two places at once. And that's impossible, right? Like, you can't be in two places at once, but an electron can be in two places at once. And so there's this theory that we have an infinite number of dimensions where little changes, like any possibility of an event happening or science coming together in any way has happened, and it just is happening simultaneously in all these different dimensions, which honestly terrifies me. But this theory kind of lends into the idea of extraterrestrial activity or paranormal activity as just being like places where these dimensions kind of cross over in weird ways, or like bleed into each other in weird ways.
Yeah. Freaking me out.
Did you ever watch that movie? It's got Gwyneth Paltrow in it. It's called Sliding Doors.
Oh gosh, I feel like I saw that years ago. I don't even remember what it was about. Was it paranormal?
No. It's like a romantic comedy, but it's what happens in the movie is that she's like, she gets fired from her job or something, and she goes home early and she catches her boyfriend cheating and blah, 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 blah. But then it like rewinds, and there's a version of her who misses the train and gets there just after the side piece leaves the house and doesn't catch her boyfriend cheating. And then it goes through like both versions of her life that are happening, like, just because, oh, like, because in one she caught the train and in the other one she didn't catch the train. And that is the easiest version of the multiverse that I can, like, think of. Yeah. It's not a good movie. I'm not going to say it's a good movie. No, but... So then they bring in a psychic. And that's where they lost me a tiny bit, but you just stay with me. This shit gets weird. So they bring in a psychic, and she supposedly had no idea where she was going before that day, and she had no opportunity to research the area or whatever. But she goes outside the house, which is a new build, and she asks if there was a previous house there. And Alice says, yes, there was a previous house there that had gotten torn down. And then this psychic suggests that there was someone killed on the land. Mm-hmm. And that the homeowners that were the previous, like, owned the home before, didn't treat people very well. And that they weren't good people. And she's getting these images of, like, a big fire. And apparently, Florence had burned down, like, more than once. Like, there have been a couple of really big fires in the history there. Mm-hmm. And during this interview with Alice and the psychic... On camera, the fire alarm, like the fire smoke alarm in the house, kept beeping. Like it was low battery or something. Mm-hmm. It didn't do that at all for the whole year that they were there shooting that documentary. It only did that when the psychic was there talking about the fire.
That's weird.
In Florence.
I don't like it.
It's fucking weird. So, that was weird. And then there's a next door neighbor. Her name is Erin. She's like a teacher. She's a history teacher. And I think she's probably a little bit psychic because apparently she's been there. She's been Alice's next door neighbor the whole time that Alice has been there. And she, as a child, like she was five, went over to Alice's house. And apparently this was pretty normal that she would go over to visit Miss Alice or whatever. And she told Alice that there was a body buried in her backyard.
Oh my God.
Five-year-old kid. So that's creepy. Kids saying stuff like that's fucking creepy.
Well, yeah, what would you do if a kid said that to you? Oh my God.
I would move.
Oh my God.
There's a body buried in your backyard. Oh, all right. It's on the market right now. Oh. I'm done. I'm done with this. So that being said, like, I would probably chalk this up to, like, creepy shit that kids say, because kids say creepy shit all the time. And usually it's something, you know, they've heard on TV or whatever, and you didn't realize that they were paying attention. But apparently she was brought in to a thing where a group of historians had been searching in this particular area of Mississippi for some unmarked graves from the Civil War. And someone who was part of this search, and it had been going on for a long time, brought in little baby Erin with dowsing rods, which is a thing that they do. I'm not really sure why, but dowsing rods are like metal sticks that you hold. And the idea is if you get near a body that the rods will like cross, and it has something to do with like magnets or being psychic, or I don't fucking know why, but he gave them to Erin because he said that sometimes kids are more open to things than adults are. Little baby Erin wandering around found four unmarked graves. Like, they verified them. Like, she actually found four unmarked graves.
In Alice's backyard?
Not in Alice's backyard, just in general. Oh. So, like, in this other area. So this is, like, a side story about her. But it's a side story about her as a kid that made me go, okay, they're telling you this to tell you that there was something about Erin that makes her coming in and saying there's someone buried in your backyard a little bit more legit. Okay. Right? And then they check the town records. And remember when I was talking about these giant fires?
Mm-hmm.
There are no records kept for certain sections of the town before the fires, because these two giant fires that burned down Florence, Mississippi, destroyed a ton of records. So there's no evidence necessarily of people buried or not in certain areas of town, right?
Whoa.
Okay. So that's all of the evidence. And I want to kind of debrief with you about the story first. And then I'm going to tell you the big spoiler part. So if you don't want the spoiler, if you're listening and you don't want the spoiler, I would say just cut your losses now. I mean, you can listen, and before I say it, I'll say spoiler, and you don't have to listen to that part. Because that's basically the story about Alice's haunting. But there's something that's really crazy that I'm going to tell you about, and it's a big spoiler later. So, before we get there, what do you think? What do you think about Alice's house in Florence, Mississippi?
It sounds... I don't know if it's the fact that it's more recent, or that it's, I don't know, it just seems more legit to me, the strangeness of it. I don't know, I kind of like it. It's kind of creepy, and the beams of light aspect kind of reminds me of a podcast again that I was just listening to that had to do with these orbs of light and things like that, and so that kind of freaks me out. But I don't know, it makes me wonder, you know, what were there people buried under her yard? I mean, that is something I would probably want to figure out before building a house on top of land.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing in a town where this huge disaster happened and there's missing records. There's no way other than really cost prohibitive ways, like digging up the whole yard, or, you know, testing for like core sample testing and stuff like that, that would take a lot of money and like labs and police and all sorts of stuff. Yeah. You know, there's no way to really know for sure. So it's sort of, I could go either way on it, because it's really convenient to say, oh, there was a house here and there was a fire and they killed somebody and they buried them in the yard. Mm-hmm. And there's no proof. There's no way to know. Does that mean that there's not something weird going on in that house? There's definitely something weird going on in that house.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I guess it's hard because so many of these paranormal documentaries, whether it's just like A Haunting in Connecticut or whatever. I know that was a movie, but before it was a movie, it was a documentary. So even that kind of thing where it's like a TV show or just a haunting, you know, paranormal investigators or whatever, it feels like they come from the approach of believers who are trying to convince you that something is there. And what I liked about this documentary was that while they are definitely biased toward the paranormal, mm-hmm. they at least tried to present you with some legitimate evidence, at least that they were trying to disprove things or trying to find, you know.
Yeah, that's kind of a cool way to have the documentary.
Yeah, it's more of a, this has not been debunked, than a proof. It's not, oh, this is absolutely proof that there's a ghost here or mm-hmm. whatever. It's like, well, the psychic says this and this kid Aaron says this, but there are no records. But there aren't any records that say mm-hmm. no either. So we really just don't know. Which is a little bit, I don't know. At the end, I felt a little let down until like the last 5 minutes, but as they were seeming to wrap up the story and they were talking about being done, they were wrapping up, and I was feeling a little let down by this. Well, here's all this crazy stuff that happened, but we really couldn't, we couldn't prove anything, you know, real, but we couldn't disprove anything either, so believe what you want to believe, kind of a thing. And I feel like that's where we always end up at the end of a story, too, is kind of, I couldn't verify this, but I couldn't disprove it either. But then some crazy shit.
Oh my God, tell me the crazy shit.
Okay. Spoilers! Stop the podcast here. It's a spoiler. Okay. So at the very end of the film, they're like leaving the house, but these two amateur investigators leave their cameras up all the time or whatever. So they're still rolling camera. And they're in there, and on camera, while they're still there, this fucking baseball rolls down the goddamn stairs, like, while they're there. And you go, whoa, like, that's crazy enough, right? That this thing just happened again. You're like, whoa, oh my God, I can't believe that they caught it.
Again?
Because it's happened a handful of times, but it's happened a handful of times over 9 years.
Yeah.
Right? And it happens again on camera when they're still there. That's pretty nuts. Yeah. That's crazy. But it's something that you're used to. Like, you want, not used to, but like, okay, that's cool. They go in, they, like, bang on stuff, they try to figure out how it happened, they're like, maybe it was a gust of wind or something, because I thought I heard a door slam at the same time, like, that's weird. They can't figure out why it rolled down. They caught it on camera, two angles, they caught it on camera, but they can't figure out what happened. They do kind of say, oh, well, I think I heard this door slam, but I think it was just, like, kind of open, and what we were hearing was that the wind blew it open. Which still doesn't explain the ball rolling down the stairs, but it kind of explains the door sound, so whatever. Still, this is pretty cool. But it's not the most amazing thing. Here's the most amazing thing. Later, one of the investigators, Brad, the journalist, he's going through all of his stuff. He's going through, like, the film footage and stuff.
Yeah.
And what he finds, that moment where they hear the door slam, he's watching a video of the front door, but in the reflection, in the chandelier, in the dining room, you can see a door open and then slam itself. This is, okay, every time in every ghost investigation podcast, every ghost investigation TV show or whatever, a door swings open or whatever, and I'm always like, okay, that's great. I want to see it close. Or if it closes, I want to see it open. You know what I mean? Like, you can explain a gust of wind or something like that if it goes one direction. But it goes both directions. And I'm not talking about a little bit. It opens up all the way. You can see it in the reflection, like, really clearly in the video. It opens up all the way, and then it slams closed. By itself, Allison. By itself. You are not as excited about this as I was.
I'm just like, that's just like, that's crazy. And so you're saying that he's going back and he's looking at all the camera footage around the house. And so somewhere, like, upstairs, where nobody was, they see a door open and shut.
It's not upstairs, it's downstairs, but there's no one in the room. You can see it really clearly on camera that there's no one, like, behind the door. Like, the door opens all the way, you can see that there's no one behind it, and then the door shuts all the way, and there's no one on the other side. Like, you can see it really clearly that there's no one around. And it blew my mind. Like, you have to watch it. I think you really just have to see it to understand. But the ball rolling is already creepy, but they talk about it at the very beginning because they have it on camera already. It's like, it's the most compelling evidence that they have is this video of the ball rolling down the stairs, which is cool, but it's not like, I don't know, it's not like the most amazing thing. And you could probably pretty easily fake it, or, like, who fucking knows what is going on with that. But watching that door open and close, especially when, like, this is all just, like, amateur video. It's, they weren't there, they weren't set up anymore. This was, like, after, like, as they were breaking down the professional camera equipment, because the documentary itself was over. Like, they had finished what they were going to do there. And that's the part that just really, like, made my brain explode. And also, this is another one of those things of, like, what do you really... It costs a lot of money to make a film, and they put money into it, and they're not going to make $1 million. They're releasing it on... They released it on a bunch of platforms. It's, like, $2 to rent. You know what I mean? It's not like it's going to be wide release. They're not going to make a ton of money on this. So they're not... No one is capitalizing on this event. This poor woman doesn't want to sell the house because she doesn't want someone else to buy it and experience the same stuff that she's experienced. So she's living in a different house and holding on to this property. No one is really winning here. You know what I mean? Like, no one really has anything to gain except for knowledge and understanding. And they're bringing this story to the public. And I think that's really compelling. It's the most real story of a haunting, almost because it's mundane, like almost because it's just, this happens every once in a while, and this happened this one time, and we've never seen it again. You know, like, here's the stuff that happens all the time. Lights flash all the time. We've had conversations with this spirit, but it's not like it happens on cue. It just happens over the last 10 years. This has happened before, you know?
I agree. I mean, I think it is really, really compelling. It's creepy. I mean, the skeptic in me wants to debunk it. I mean, but everybody is kind of any kind of debunker or whatever. But it's like, all right, well, okay, so who slammed the door? Or who was upstairs? Or who had the string tied to the doorknob, you know? But I just... I have to watch it, you know, I kind of want to go see it, and I want to check it out. And I mean, the baseball thing rolling down the stairs, that's kind of cool. I mean, makes you wonder if the ghost had some experience with baseball before, you know, it's like
professional baseball player. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I don't even care about who the ghost is anymore. Like, you know what I mean? I think most of the stories that we talk about, there is that level of human sort of contact. Like,
yeah, there's something different about this house and the way that it's showing some really interesting stuff. I mean, the shafts of light, that is very strange. And what she describes as this beam of daylight, like that is creepy. Like, if that came in my bedroom, like, I don't even know how many years of therapy I would need. But holy shit, like, it seems extraterrestrial to me with that idea too. So yeah. I'd be interested to see more research done on this.
On this house? Well, I don't think they're stopping. I don't think they're stopping anytime soon. So who knows? Maybe there will be a part two in the next decade. It does, getting into multidimensional theory and that kind of kookier stuff, but that has some sort of basis in science, like, really freaks me out, because it's the idea of multiple dimensions that scares me. I used to watch, there was a show in the 90s called... Oh, shit. What was that show called? Jumpers? Sliders. It's called Sliders. Did you watch that show? I'm screaming. I'm, like, yelling. There's this show in the 90s called Sliders, and the whole point of the show is that they have, like, some weird portal machine that takes them to an alternate dimension, but for some reason, they can't get back to their own dimension, and so every episode is, like, them in a different dimension that's, you know, horrible in some way. And ever since that show, this has been a legitimate fear of mine, that there are, like, other dimension Beckys running around. And obviously, at least one of them is doing things 1,000 times better than I am. Maybe my dimension is the shitty dimension. I mean, this year, for sure, for sure, this dimension is the shitty dimension. There's got to be a better dimension out there. Okay, physicists, get on the dimension gun. Portal guns, right now. I want it. Amazon.
I gotta do more research about this. I think my husband has done a lot more research on quantum physics and has some theories about it, because he always looks up all that strange stuff. But
yes,
I don't know. It doesn't seem to scare me as much as I just wonder. I don't know. I just wonder why. Like, why? It just seems like a waste of energy to have that many things kind of playing out at the same time.
Energy is infinite, Allison. There's no wasting energy. It just is.
I guess so. It just seems like a lot. Because, I could make a lot of decisions in a day. And to go through, it's like, okay, kids, what do you want for lunch? And to have it go into all of the different sandwiches that it could be.
It's all the same. It's the exact same universe, except for it's tuna salad instead of. Yeah, I think that's where it breaks. That's where the theory breaks down for me, too, is those mundane choices. But that's what infinite numbers of universes would do for you, is create those mundane differences that might, you know, make a big difference later on. I don't know. This is blowing my mind.
I'm going to ask my husband, hold on. Do you have any ideas on quantum physics and multiple dimensions?
Yeah.
Do you want to speak about it at all?
You want to be on the podcast, Eric?
Sure. With quantum physics, There's a thing where they discovered with the electron that it acts as a wave when it's unobserved, but once you observe it, it will act in one way or the opposite way. So, in theory, any time that a decision is made, both decisions have been made, and we live out one of those decisions, and the universe actually splits into two different universes.
See, yeah, that just blows my mind. Because I was just telling her, it's like, because if every mother in the world asks her children, what do you want for lunch? And it could be one of 5 choices. You're saying that there could be a dimension for every single one of those sandwiches or lunch choices. And well, that's just like...
That's not... Because dimensions and universes are 2 completely different things. So you can have multiple different universes happening in the same, technically in the same dimension. Because dimensions are, like, you have 3-dimensional space.
Uh-huh.
So there's a height, width, and length. But then you have time, which is our 4th dimension, where the same object can occupy the same space at 2 different timelines, or 2 different times. So there's something that already occupied the space that I am in. You know, 10 minutes ago, you could have been standing here. Now I am in the same 3-dimensional space that you were in at a different timeline. So it's a 4th dimension.
I don't know about you, Becky, but my head is exploding.
Yeah, I don't. I'm gone. I'm lost.
Maybe we need.
Let's just go back to ghosts.
We can do a whole podcast.
Yeah, maybe we need to come back to this.
This is not a 5-minute explanation kind of a thing, I think.
That was pretty interesting.
It was interesting.
Thank you for sharing.
I'm more confused. I'm more confused than that. Okay, well, happy Halloween!
Happy Halloween!
Well, I think that's about it.
That's all good. I like it. Yep. That's my top. That's my A. I like that one. I gotta watch the movie.
I think you should. I think I gave it a B, but I amend that. It really is an A, because it's very exciting, and it's, but there are just these moments of genuine, like, it's not super entertaining to watch, I don't think, but if you're actually into it, there's some really good evidence. There's some compelling evidence, and they do a really good job at trying to debunk it, and they can't, and it's just, I don't know. Like, that house might legitimately be haunted. I don't know what it is, but there's something going on there, and it's weird.
Yeah.
That's my story.
All right. I'm
sticking to it. Okay, well, thank you, Allison.
Thank you.
For recording. That was fun. Everybody, thank you for listening, and remember to subscribe, rate, and review, especially on iTunes and Stitcher and all of those, because it helps people find us. Check us out on social media. All the links to our social media are on the website, obviouslyhaunted.com. And if you want to contact us and tell us about your spooky rolling down staircase balls.
Or quantum physics explanations.
Then send us an email at obviouslyhauntedpodcast@gmail.com. And yeah, thank you for listening. Thanks for supporting the show. And remember, apparently, Florence, Mississippi is
obviously haunted.
Okay, that was awesome.